the agenda for this week. Not that much stuff, but hopefully very, very helpful and relevant for you guys this week. We're going to spend maybe like 15, 20 minutes just quickly talking about linked lists. Linked lists are going to be covered on the quiz, so perhaps it'd be very helpful to learn a bit about what that is. We're going to spend the vast majority of today's section going over Quiz Zero practice problems, and then we'll save maybe 20, 30 minutes at the end for any lingering questions anyone has. And then, last 5 minutes, I'm going to give a pump-up speech for the quiz. You guys all want to be here for that because it's going to be a good time. Okay. All right, so some material and linked list. How they're typically structured is you have what's called a node, right? You have these things called nodes, which are structs. I'll go over how to create a node in the next slide. But essentially, all a linked list is data that has been strung together via pointers. And so the kind of like advantage we have of using a linked list over perhaps like an array is the fact that in an array you need one contiguous block of memory all in the same place, one after another, to be able to have that. Whereas a linked list, you could have like random little bits of memory all over your computer strung together by pointers. And in this way, you kind of can access information that comes one after the other without needing just a huge chunk of memory in your computer somewhere. And so this is one of the major reasons why we use linked list. Secondly, it's very easy to dynamically resize a linked list because an array, when you declare an array, you have a certain set value. Say I wanted to create an array of 10 integers. I create an array of 10 integers and that's it. It's 10. I don't know what to do with after that. If I wanted to make it 11, can't do it. If I wanted to make it 9, can't do it. Whereas in a linked list, you can add and delete and insert wherever you want. You can dynamically resize your structure here, your data structure. And that gives us a lot more of added flexibility that we don't typically have with arrays. Anyone confused on just like the basic structure of how a linked list is or why we'd use one over an array? Yeah, we'll go over in detail like how to actually create one, but this is just kind of the general sense right now. Cool. And so arrays are strung together of these lovely little things called nodes. All node is a type of struct. Remember, a struct is if you wanted to create a certain type of variable in C that doesn't already exist, you as a programmer can actually create that yourself. And so this type of data structure is called a node, has actually been created by us that doesn't exist within C on its own. And the way that you create one is you have the header of type def struct, which tells the compiler, I'm about to create a struct. We're going to name it node. And inside, we're going to declare a variable in, which is going to store a value. And then we're also going to have a pointer called next that points to the next node in the linked list. And then you finish that off by just repeating node again so the compiler knows, okay, that's the end of my struct. And so in this way, we're kind of creating like a mini little, like cute little array kind of like thing with a value and with a pointer. And then you can link them all together with those pointers so that they can all kind of be strung together in a chain. Cool. Can you hear that a bit better?
Yes.
All right. Thanks. So the way that, as you guys can see, a typical linked list is structured is you have a head. You have the head value, which isn't being pointed by any other pointer, but it's going to point at or reference another node. The node after is going to reference the node after that, and so on and so forth, until you eventually hit the end of your linked list, and you just won't have a pointer there. And so think like on a chain, or if any of you guys made, I don't know, like with Fruit Loops when you were little, you would string them together and wear them around your neck. Think it's the exact same thing. You have these little things that you can string together that point to the one after it, to the one after it, and so on and so forth, to have a chain of a data structure that you can kind of use however you'd like. Okay, so the way that we would typically insert or delete any node from a linked list is very different depending on where that node is. So for example, because pointers are always pointing at a specific value, when you delete or insert a node, you want to make sure that the pointers all are pointing at the right things. So if you wanted to potentially insert a new node with the value of 1 inside a sorted linked list, we all know here from the picture that's going to go in between head and 2, right? Because 1 fits right there. But the way in which we would do that is by first dereferencing the pointer from head and sending that to 1, But we come into kind of a problem here. Can anyone see what the problem is if we were to first dereference the pointer from head to one? What problem might we run into if we try to add this to the front of our array? Exactly. So here we have a pointer that was once pointing from the head to two, but if you get rid of that pointer, you point it to one, we now have no idea where to go to find two. Because as I said before, you've got a giant chunk of memory in your computer. All these nodes could be randomly interspersed in any place in your computer, and you kind of like don't know how to go about finding that. And so you need to have pointers pointing to all nodes at the end, or else if you accidentally dereference one without first assigning a value first, you're going to just kind of lose everything afterwards. So what we're going to do is you would first want to create a pointer on your on the node you want to insert, point it to where you want to insert it to, and then afterwards you can point head back to one. Does that make sense to everybody here? Great. Think of it as just like a chain. If you add a chain, it's kind of just intuitive how you would go about inserting that. Okay, so that is actually much shorter than I thought it would be, a 5-minute spiel on like lists, just so you guys kind of have the basic idea of what that is. Here we have the agenda for quiz zero. Don't let this intimidate you. I know it's a lot of information. It looks very scary. It's also a lot of, I think, CSE kind of terms, things like, hexadecimal, strings, pointers, dynamic memory allocations are very scary sounding terms, but we're gonna kind of break them down, do some practice problems so that you guys are all ready for this test. How many of you guys have already started studying? Okay, you guys probably wanna start getting started on that because the quiz is tomorrow, or Thursday for some of you. So we're gonna go over some practice problems. If you guys all wanna take out like a sheet of paper, a pencil, we're going to just kind of spend the vast majority of today's section going over some of that, so you guys kind of have an idea of what to expect on the quiz. Okay. A couple logistical details as well. For anybody who has not been to that link there, it's on, if you go to cs50.yale.edu, on the front page there is a link that says About Quiz Zero. Link takes you there. If you haven't read it, please read it because it tells you really important information regarding the quiz. I'm going to pull this out from that just because physically, if you guys don't know where to go, we will have problems. And so if your last name starts with A to N, go to the Law School Auditorium. And if your last name starts with P to Z, go to Davies Auditorium. And this only applies for people in the Wednesday section. If you're taking the quiz on Thursday, you go to SSS 114, where lecture typically is. O to Z, you're gonna go to the Davies Auditorium. I'm gonna change that right now. Oh yeah, you just fail automatically. Oh yeah, that's you, Krista. Yeah, my bad. Yep, O to Z, you're gonna go to Davies Auditorium. I'm gonna fix this once I upload. Yeah, and then also something important to keep in mind is that Wednesday, if you are officially enrolled in the Wednesday section, you must take your quiz on Wednesday. And if you're enrolled in Thursday, you must take your quiz Thursday, and it's during class time, where I think it's like 1 to 2:15 on Wednesdays and 2:30 to 3:45 on Thursdays. If you have an irreconcilable conflict, Dean's excuses are the only thing, unfortunately, we can take because we have had a vast majority of requests to switch from Wednesday to Thursday, which we can't honor unless we have a Dean's request. Okay. So before we get started on a couple of the practice problems, I'm just going to go over Andy's helpful tips for success. You guys, when you study, you really want to practice writing code by hand. The first time I ever took a CS quiz, I hadn't practiced writing code by hand before, and it was extremely shocking at how difficult it was. When you guys don't get into the habit of, you know, typing out everything, it comes very naturally, being able to have auto-completed brackets and semicolons there. When you write it out by hand, sometimes it's very, very easy to forget a semicolon or forget to close a bracket or forget to, you know, close a colon or something like that. So when you write code by hand, it's a very different feel. So you guys, when you're working through some of the practice problems, it'd be good to really practice today or tomorrow, I suppose, if you're taking the quiz on Thursday. Secondly, we have the last like 8 years worth of practice quizzes online. This year's quiz will probably be very, very similar to all of them. They're all very similar. You kind of get into the style of the type of questions that we ask, the type of functions that we'll write it in, et cetera, et cetera. So take the practice quizzes, especially under time constraints. 75 minutes to do the quiz is not a lot of amount of time. It's very, very long. And so you guys really want to make sure that you guys are in the habit of writing code by hand quickly, because you don't want the first time that to see a quiz of that length be on your quiz. You guys really want to make sure that you practice beforehand. Fourth, you want to review the lection and section slides. You don't have to memorize things. Actually, everyone is allowed a one sheet of white paper notes, front and back. You guys can type or write. If you find yourself needing to memorize anything, put it down on that sheet. I guarantee you, like, you don't want to be stuck in the middle of that quiz being like, oh yeah, what's the runtime of like this sort versus that sort? Just put it down and copy it straight from your note sheet. Then you can actually just use like your brain to think about the problems rather than having to recall facts. And so really take advantage of any niche details that you think you need to memorize, plop it down on the review sheet. Okay, any questions logistically regarding the quiz before we start some quiz problems practice? Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to look at the quiz already, sure. But is it going to be application mostly, or is there going to also be like knowledge questions? Like
it's a lot. So the way that I would describe the quiz is I've put together some practice problems I've kind of pulled from all the quizzes, but you'll see that there's two main types of questions we'll ask you. One is a very like low level detail of stuff. We'll give you a small chunk of code and say, is there an error here? What would be printing out here? What will this code produce, et cetera? So very low level like implementation details. And on the flip side, we'll have very high level like knowledge-based questions. Can you explain what the difference between a binary search and a linear search is? Why would we want to use one over the other? Perhaps what is GDB? Why do we want to use GDB? Higher level, like more fundamental understanding questions. So you'll see a mixture of the two of them on your quiz. Anything else before we head straight into it? Okay. One more, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. So like, you're saying 75 minutes is too short, like it is unlikely that we will finish, or like 75 minutes is exactly as much time as we would need if we were appropriately prepared?
Okay, so the quiz is challenging. It is definitely challenging. You will find yourself short on time. You're probably gonna hit like 10, 15 minutes to go and being like, shit, I have so much left to do. And that's totally fine. Everyone's gonna feel the same way. Just be very aware of how much time you have. And so that's why I tell you guys to do the practice quizzes, because it really gives you a great sense of what the quiz is gonna be like. So if you find yourself like being able to finish the practice quizzes in a good amount of time, you can pace yourself well, then you won't have a problem on one through Thursday. Cool. So if everyone wants to, I think most people have like sheets of paper out already. I'm going to essentially just give you sample questions, give you guys like a few minutes to do them, and we'll go over as a class kind of what the answers to them are. So this is a very typical like early question we'll ask you, just converting numbers between different bases. Binary, as you guys can recall, is base 2. Decimal is base 10, or what we as humans typically interpret. Hexadecimal is base 16, which is 0 through 9, as well as A through F. So there's four numbers I'm asking you guys to convert here. I'll give you guys like 3 to 4 minutes to kind of think through how we would go about solving this.
Are we allowed calculators?
You won't need calculators. Yeah, I think like basic addition, I think, is all you guys will be asked to do. And just so like I kind of have a sense of when everyone is done, kind of look up, wave, and a smile, look happy if you're done. Yeah. All right, maybe a couple more minutes. Okay, let's bring it in. I'm purposely gonna give you guys less time than you probably need to do some of these problems, simply because I wanna make sure that we get through a bunch of problems. So no worries if you didn't have a chance to finish, totally okay, as long as you kind of have an idea of how to go about this. Okay, so let's go ahead and do the first one. So first, does anyone wanna tell me in binary, what do each of these digits represent in terms of their values? Yeah.
So it's like 2 to the power of 0, 2 to
exactly.
the power of 1.
So. Right. So typically when we're in base 10, all these represent are like 10 to the base of 0, right? That's your 1's place. All your 10's place is 10 to the power of 1. Your hundreds place is 10 to the power of 2. Whatever base you're in is going to do the exact same thing, just with a different base. So binary, all that is base 2. You're going to convert all the digits into 2 to whatever power of that digit. And so in this sense, we can kind of have an easier way of being able to add up or sum all the numbers in order to convert into base 10. So, does anyone want to tell me what the answer to the first one is in base 10?
Two.
Yeah, 42, there you go. So the way we got this answer was by doing 2 to the first, which is 2, plus 2 to the third, which is 8, plus 2 to the fifth, which is whatever is left over. You sum them up, and it's 42. Is anyone confused on how we got that? So basic addition, like I said, you guys should be OK. If not, well, we can practice that too, but that's all right. Cool. Does anyone want to give me the answer to this, the second one as well? 50? Good. Anyone confused on how we got that either? Cool. I'll have the answers on the next slide, so no worries if you need to like copy it down. OK, so hexadecimal is a bit trickier, but I'm going to show you guys a shortcut for how to do it. So hexadecimal, as you remember, all it is base 16. And because we as humans don't actually have 16 numbers to represent that, we go from 0 to 9, which are our first 10 values, and then we do A through F, which are the next 6 values. And so the easiest way to go from any binary number to hexadecimal is to think of them, break them up into halves. And so any binary number we'll give you will probably have 8 digits. You can just break them up in the middle. So the first one, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Kind of think it up, you know, draw a slash or a comma in between them. And you can kind of just convert directly whatever this is to the first number of hexadecimal and whatever here is to the second number of hexadecimal. So remember, from common like notation, what do all hexadecimal values start with?
0x.
So you know that anytime we ask you to convert any number to hexadecimal, or anytime you see any number that starts with 0x, you know that it's a hexadecimal value. And then you're going to be asked to determine what these two digits are. And the way you do that, tallying up that half and tallying up that half. So in this example, what would 1111 be? What value would that be? That'd be F, right? That'd be 6 or 15. So this would be F. 1111 here is also F. So 1111 in hexadecimal, all it is 0xFF. Because this half represented F, the value of 15, and this half represented F, the value of 15. Because remember, we're counting from 0 to 9. A is like 10, B is like 11, F is 15. And so does that make sense to everybody, how we got from binary to hexadecimal? Yeah, so this is binary, right? Imagine this is just a binary number. So you have 2 to the 0th, which is 1.
Okay, so
yeah, and then you just total that out.
Okay.
That's all it is.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
So you go from binary to decimal to hexadecimal.
That's the easiest way to do so.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Not so much of, you're not going to decimal, because decimal only has 0 to 9.
Right.
We're just kind of
like
splitting this up into 2. I mean, you're tallying up using basic math.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it is a bit confusing, but just know that you can divide up whatever this value is into just halves. Look, what is this in binary? What number is that? It's going to be something from 0 to F. Here is also going to be something from 0 to F. And then you can just put those two right there.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, so you guys want to try the next one then? 0, 1, 0, 1. 1, 0. 1, 0. I'll give you guys like 30 seconds, since you probably didn't know the trick to how to do this earlier. Anyone want to give this one a shot?
0x5a.
0x5a. Good. So this here would be. You want to tell us how you got that? First, how did you get the 5?
Because because like 0, 1, 0, 1 is 5.
Does everyone understand why 0, 1, 0, 1 is 5? You got 1 here, you have nothing in 2 to the first, and 2 to the second, you have 1, which is 4. So you add the 4 plus the 1, you have 5. Everyone good? Okay, and then what would this be and why? What number does A correspond to?
10.
And what is this in base 2?
Yeah, it's 10.
Exactly. So this second value here would be 0x5a. Everyone good on how to convert? It's like a lot simpler than you think it is. Just want to make sure you know kind of like helpful tips and tricks for how to do that. Yeah.
Why can you just like split it like in the middle like that? Like just be like, okay, I'm only going to care about these first.
Because that's actually the way hexadecimal values are represented. 0x, that actually means nothing other than telling you that it's a hexadecimal number. And this always represents the first 4 digits. And this always represents the last 4 digits. And so these 2 digits just correspond to different bits.
So always
you're always going to get 8 value bits.
Yeah. Is that just like a thing here? Or is that a thing?
That's just the thing.
Okay.
Yep, in computers. Yep.
Awesome.
Also, so in this example, we converted from binary to decimal and from binary to hexadecimal. You guys want to make sure you also practice going the other way around. So if I gave you 0xff or 0xff, you could draw that out in binary, right? You convert f into binary, which is 1111. Convert f to binary, which is 1111. So we maybe ask you to do the other way around. So decimal to binary or hexadecimal to binary. So you want to make sure you know both ways. We'll probably ask you a combination of the two. Yeah, you have a question? I can see. You're good? Okay. Am I good to erase this? Great. All right, so answers are here if anyone is curious later on and get confused. Okay.
Does it matter if we put our letters in capital or lowercase?
It does, because in hexadecimal, by convention, all the characters are uppercase. So A through F are going to be uppercase. If you put a lowercase a, I don't know if we would necessarily mark it wrong, but theoretically, like, that's not technically how you're supposed to have it. So they should all be uppercase. Yeah, good question. Okay. Second question. Consider this lovely program here. I'll ask the question. I'll come back to this. So firstly, what's inside of standard io.h that's of interest to the program? Secondly, what does void signify in line 3? And third, what does returning 0 from main, as in line 6, generally signify? If you guys want to write those down, since I have to switch back to the slide so you guys can see code. This is an example of like maybe a higher level question where we ask you kind of what things mean in a program. Okay, everyone good for me to go back to the slide? Okay, cool. So I'll give you guys maybe like 3 minutes to look at this one real quick. Okay, so this one's like fairly easy conceptually. Does anyone want to tell me what's first inside by hashtag including our standard io.h library file? Why do we need that library included for this program? What here do we need it for? Yeah.
We need for the
printf. Exactly. So printf, anytime you take an input from the user and print something to the screen, that's the standard input-output library. Think of it that way, input-output. Do I have an output? Yes, I do. So I know that I'm always going to need the standard IO library. So printf is the function by which we need to access and define and hashtag include the standard IO library. Okay. Secondly, what does void signify? We have the int main void. What does void mean here on line 3? Yeah, in the back.
Takes nothing in line argument.
Exactly. So remember, we've learned, starting with our third PSET, that you can actually specify command line arguments that your program, that your main function takes, as you, the user, call it. If we have void, that means that you can just run the program directly without any command line arguments. Everyone clear on that? Okay. And lastly, why do we bother doing this return zero thing here? Like, I don't really feel like we need, why do we even have an int main? Why do we can't just have void main void? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so sure. Just to, so that we can ensure that the program's exiting successfully, as opposed to if it was numbered, and we would know that that's a different kind of error.
Yeah, exactly. So this is just a very tradition, like a very conventional thing that we do, is that just at the end of your program, just to make sure that your main function is running correctly, we always want to do return zero, even though we may necessarily not see that printed anywhere, because as programmers, you know, if you have many different lines of code and you don't know where things are going wrong, and if an error happens, you want to make sure you get that error. And so typically, if something goes wrong, we'll return a one just to make sure we know what that is. So if you see a return zero, that typically means your program has executed successfully. Yeah. Good. Cool. Okay. Second program here. Consider that. And if you guys see a float, you guys can probably have a good idea of what I'm about to ask you. So when this program executes, as you can see, I'm declaring a float inside my main function. I'm naming it answer, and I'm setting that equal to 1 divided by 10. I'm printing out to one decimal place that float, and then I'm returning 0. So when executing the program, think back to greedy now, this program prints 0.0. As we all know, hopefully we all know, 1 divided by 10 is not 0.0, it's 0.1. But explain why this program thinks that 1 divided by 10 prints to 0.1 other than 0.1. I'll give you guys maybe like 30 seconds to just quickly think about that. I'll go back to the program. Anyone want to give it a shot? In 3 sentences or less, because typically we're going to restrict all questions or all answers to 3 sentences or less, so you don't just regurgitate random things onto your quiz. Yeah, take a shot.
So I think there's this thing called like float point and position.
Yeah.
So there might be 0.0, for instance, there might be like 0.09, mm-hmm. but when you print the first digit, it will be 0.0.
Close, not quite. Christabel?
You're dividing 1 and 10, and they're both integers, yeah. And so the way that it's going to store it is like as an integer, and so the closest integer would be 0.0 instead of 0.1.
Yeah, that's really good. That's the right answer. So this is a very confusing concept for a lot of kids, and I really want to make sure that this is like reinforced in everyone's head. So what we call floating point imprecision, or the reason why a lot of your programs in greedy didn't work initially, was because you forgot to cast your variable. So what Christabel said was entirely correct. A float is inherently imprecise because in a computer, right, we have a finite amount of bits of memory we can use to represent numbers. So for example, the CS50 IDE is a 64-bit computer. A float can only be represented by a finite amount of those bits. And so 0.1 with infinite zeros, that's what 0.1 is, right? But we can't actually store that number in our computer. We just don't have enough memory to do so. And so the nearest approximation of what's stored in memory is actually something like 0.000 something, 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 which once you truncate it, rounds down to 0.0. And so this example is just one that demonstrates lots of issues we have whenever we're trying to incorrectly do math without casting it as a different integer. So just be wary of like this happening on quizzes. If we give you a block of code and it's like what prints out at the end, and if it's some like random value, like you guys should know why that's happening. Yeah.
And truncate is get rid of everything after a certain.
Yeah. So actually, this is a really bad example because 0.100 whatever actually would truncate down to 0.1. But if you were to run it, I don't remember, because last year they ran it on a different program. They ran it in something called the CS50 appliance, which is different from the IDE. That was a 32-bit system, I think. And so there were different numbers. But essentially, just know that the whole concept of truncation and how it just like cuts things off. And so if it rounds,
without rounding.
Exactly. Yep. Cool. Hi, in the back. We're just going over some quiz review questions. All right. So consider a different program here. I'm going to give you guys a couple minutes to read over this. This was something that was covered very recently that I think blew a lot of your guys' minds. But we're going to talk through this again just to make sure you understand it completely. Okay. Okay. Anyone need more time to read through this code? Okay. So, it seems to me that in this program, I'm creating two strings by using getString, one called s and one called t. And if they're equals to each other, it should print you type the same thing. But elsewise, it would print you type different things, right? Seems very, very simple. But however, if I actually try to write this program, it seems that even when I input the exact same strings, it still prints out you type different things. Does anyone want to take a shot at why this program always responds that the inputs are different, even when the words themselves are the same? So if I were to input, David loves to use this example, like mom, right? Lowercase m-o-m. For s, t equals lowercase m-o-m. If I ran this through that code, why would it print out you type different things? I'll give you guys like 30. Does anyone need more time to think about this? Okay, I think we're good. Yeah.
Okay, so like, it's something about where it's stored in memory, right?
Yep.
Like, it's like, if the string S is stored at like memory spot, I'm inventing this, 0.
Sure.
And string T is stored at memory spot like 167.
Yeah.
And then like, 0 does not equal 167.
Exactly. Okay, so remember what this incredible revelation we explained to you guys this past week, that strings don't really exist. When we create something called string, we're in reality creating something called char star, which all it is a pointer to a string, or to an array of chars. And so in this example, like, if I were to input MOM, the way that my computer would store it is within memory, /0, right? Those four characters, chars, would be stored somewhere. And then these four characters, /0, are stored somewhere else, right? I have no idea where the addresses are. They're somewhere in my computer, but I don't exactly know where they are. When I create a string S, all that really is a pointer to the start of the string. And when I create this t value, all that is a pointer to here. And so when you're trying to equate and check to see if s is equals to t, the computer is really just returning to you the address of this m and the address of that m. And because they're two separate pieces of data that are stored in two different addresses in your computer is never going to recognize them as being the same. Does anyone want to give a shot at what we would have to do if we wanted to correct this and have a correct running program instead? Think about that for a couple seconds. What would we need to change to get this program functioning the way we want it to function? Yeah, want to take a stab at it?
Can we try to dereference the pointer and like check through the array?
That's one way to do it. So, what's your name again? I'm sorry, remind me.
Zeke.
Yeah, so what Z suggested would absolutely work, right? We could dereference the pointer and actually go and access the physical data inside of here, and we can just compare the whole string. We can say, okay, pointer, give me what's inside here. It would return an M. And I would say, pointer, give me what's inside here, return an M. Do those match? Yes. Then we move on. We keep checking the entire two strings all the way up until the end and see if those are equal, if all the values are equal. And if all the values are equal, then we know the strings are true. Absolutely, that's how we would do it. Does anyone confused on any of this, the whole concept of how strings are really just pointers and how they don't really exist and why we get errors like the way we get it? Because I guarantee you guys, pointers and like string allocation and memory are going to come up. Yeah. Yeah. To dereference a pointer means to go to that address of the pointer and obtain the data, the value there. And the way to do that is star pointer. Don't confuse that. Yeah.
So you can just write if star s equals star t.
Well, no. It's not, because you're only checking the first letter. You're probably going to need some sort of a loop that iterates through every single character in both strings. Yeah. So if you wanted to just check to see if they started with the same thing, you can do if like star s is equal to star t. Then you would know that at least they started with the same character. Yeah.
The way you do that would be like an embedded for loop.
Yeah. Like pretty much just a for loop. Remember David in class mentioned the phrase syntactic sugar, and he had this like very confusing thing of like star t plus one, where it would iterate through and it would move the pointer. The easier way of doing this is just t of I. So it's just an array. The way that you would have a for loop that ran from 0 to I, where I is the length of the string, you could just write that instead of doing the whole pointer reference thing. So these things are exactly equivalent in your computer. You guys probably won't need to know that, but it's good to just kind of have in the back of your mind, just know that the computer recognizes different blocks of code as the same thing, because this is just far more user-friendly for us to present it like it's an array. It's just easier.
Use Sterling to get okay.
You could use Sterling, or you could, if you didn't have Sterling, you can just do up until you hit /0 for both. Either would work. Yeah.
So to dereference every single character, like if we were actually writing this code, we could just do T brackets I like with the star.
Equals S bracket I, right. And then keep moving I down up until you hit the end. Yeah, that's what you do. And I'll actually have a next example of when we actually write Sterling, so you guys will kind of get to play around with it a bit. So, is everyone clear on just memory, strings, pointers, equality, addresses, some higher level concepts that you will for sure need to know on the quiz tomorrow? All right, good. Yep. Okay. So one thing that we'll also ask you, as we do every year on a quiz, is suppose that you've forgotten, which we seem to forget to do annually, in which header file Sterling is declared, and so we have to rewrite it ourselves. Here are a list of guidelines that we can present you guys, where you get to assume that S, the string, will not be null. You can assume that S will be terminated with a /0, so you know that's what it's going to end with. And, for instance, that the length of hello would be 5. So you can assume that hello will be 5, H-E-L-L-O. You don't have to assume that the /0 counts for the length. This last thing here, do not worry about integer overflow. Does anyone remember what integer overflow is?
It's beyond the length of the bits.
So. Yeah, can you explain a bit, what does that mean?
So like if you're trying to like I guess it goes back to the truncating example earlier, but like if you have just like so many numbers that go beyond the number of bits that you can actually like assign it, then it will just kind of cut off.
Yeah. So on a typical computer, how many bits do we have?
Is it 32?
Yeah. 32, right. And so that's what? 4 billion, 2 billion? 4 billion, up to 4 billion positive integers, right? 2 billion negative, 2 billion positive, depends on how you want to do it. And so basically we can have enough integers that can go up to 2 to the 31st minus 1, right? B- because once we hit 2 to the 32nd, we don't have that much memory in our computer. And so theoretically, I could come up with a number that is like 2 to the 46th. It's a huge ass number, but theoretically you could. And so integer overflow is if you try to create an integer that goes beyond what your computer is capable of storing. And so you guys, for this example, don't have to worry about us giving you a giant string that is 2 to the 32nd. Char is long, that'd be really mean. So, all right, so I'm just gonna give you guys kind of like the base structure of this. You're gonna create a function called int strling, where I pass in a char star or a string, pointer to the string called s. Everyone copy that down. Cool. Oh, other way. So I'll give you guys, this is kind of like a harder piece of problem, so I'll give you guys maybe 5 to 6 minutes to kind of brainstorm and write this function out.
We don't have to account for no. We don't have to use
it. No, you don't. I'll give you guys a hint, a while loop may be very useful here. Yeah. Candy will also be available for the quiz, I think. So you guys will be all sugared up tomorrow. I think you got it. Yeah. Okay. Maybe 30 more seconds or so? All right. If you're not done, no worries. We'll move through this together. Okay. So I'm going to kind of just lay out the base structure for this function here. Int Sterling. First, does anyone want to tell me what that int signifies? We need to have in this function. Exactly. So whatever happens in here, we need to return an integer. And as specified in the spec, we want to return. Go for it, guys. Just keep going. It's all good. Eat it all so I don't have to take it back, actually. The int just signifies that you're going to be returning an integer. What is this char star s? What does that mean?
Like what's being inputted.
Exactly. And what is almost the same thing as char star? Which
string?
Exactly. So all we're doing is giving this a pointer to a string. Okay. Cool. Also, don't forget, if we forget to give you these brackets, don't forget to write them yourself. Because theoretically, your code is incorrect if you forget to write them. Just always pay attention. Like, little things that you don't notice when you're programming on your laptop, because your laptop does it for you, don't forget when you're writing by hand. Yeah.
Do we get the whole problem wrong?
No, don't worry. It's actually theoretically possible for you to get full points on a question, even if your code will never run in real life. I suggest you don't try to make that happen. Like, for example, like if everything you see is right, but you like forget a colon or a bracket, like your code won't actually run, but like we may be merciful. Yeah. No worries about that. No commenting. Style should be good. Like, don't smush everything on one line. We will not be happy with you if you do that. Cool. Does anyone want to give me the first line? Hint, it's like very easy. Yeah.
Int n equals 0, or like, sure. Like just set a counter.
Yep. So we want some sort of a counter, right? I'm just going to name it count for the sake of readability. What do we want to set it equal to?
0.
Yep. Semicolon. It's also very weird drawing semicolons. Just practice doing that. So we want to first have a counter of type int, because we want to count up how many characters or letters are in the string, right? So very easy first step. Okay, maybe a bit more complex now. How are we going to do so? Does anyone want to give me the line of code that may be able to help loop through whatever this is? Okay. Yeah, brave soul in the back.
Okay, so s is not equal to 0, then do something?
That's really, really close. Really close.
Okay.
So I'm going to address two things with that first. First of all, it's not exactly 0. What is it? It's the null terminated, which is backslash 0. So they're different in terms of how they're stored. So you're really close. And secondly, we don't want to just move the pointer, we want to actually access the values, right? So how do we do that? Very easy. Don't think about pointers and think about memories. Go back to like week 2 of this course. As of, remember, what are strings? How are they stored in memory? They're arrays. So how do we access each character inside? Exactly. So while, what goes inside here? As of? Ooh, I doesn't exist, does it? We can just use count, can't we?
Oh,
yeah, it's all good. We have a variable up here that's already been declared as our counter. So why don't we just use that to move through the while loop? Does that make sense? Okay. So while s of count. Does anyone want to give me what happens after here?
Does not equal.
Does not equal, right? It's the bang equals, exclamation point equals, whatever you guys want to call it. Does not equal. Remember, single quote is for a char, double quotes are for a string. Be careful when using them. So when we're looking through the array, the last character, we know we don't want it to be backslash 0. So while we're not at the end of the string, what do we want to do inside?
We want to like add to the counter, so count plus plus.
Exactly. So here we're going to do count. Count plus plus. Missing one more line. We're almost there. What are we forgetting to do?
Returning zero.
You want to return zero?
No, returning the store line. Wait.
Which return is stored count. In.
Yeah.
Exactly. So here, we're going to return count. Because what we're doing here, ultimately, we have a counter variable that's going to increment through our string. We're going to keep going around and around in this loop. And while we're not on the end of the string, which is the null terminator, and every time we go through it, we're adding to our counter, and we're going further along in this array. And at the end, once we hit the null terminator, we know, oh, we can break, return the count. We have our Sterling. Everyone makes, does everyone get how this was implemented? While loops, I know we haven't done too much with them, but they're usually like very, very useful if you don't know what your stopping condition necessarily has to be. Question?
Can we write null on the while condition?
While, yeah, so in this problem, I had you guys assume that S will not be null, because remember, theoretically, if I gave you a pointer that was like was too large of memory, it would give you the null, right? That's what the operating system would do. So if you wanted to, if I didn't tell you to assume S would be null, you need to check. So up here, you would do like if S equals equals null, return one, something like that. OK, I'll tell you why we can't do that. Because remember, in memory, right? Here, I'm going to go here. You've got giant blocks of memory, all with grids that store different values, right? And so all a string is, for example, if we were to input hello, it would be H-E-L-L-O / 0, right? And then who knows, like, random things that are in here after it. We don't actually know what's there. And so if you were to do, instead of / 0, null, it may not be null, because it just may be some like random other things that don't belong in your string. And so the way that we always know that a string ends is with / 0. And so this is always how we check to see the end of a string. Null, all that means is if you have a non-existent pointer, first of all, or if your memory is just it's so large that you can't return it, then it'd be null. So be very careful when like differentiating the difference between null and the / 0. Yeah. Everyone OK with this? Okay. Also, so I had you guys write out Sterling. Feasibly, we could also ask you to write out A to I. Remember that étoile, whatever you guys want to call it, that function in Visionaire and Caesar that converts an ASCII value to an integer. That also has come up on past quizzes of functions we've asked you to write. Pretty much any function that like you've used and is very easy to write yourself, such as like is lower, is upper, to lower, to upper, functions that would convert a string from lowercase to uppercase, we all know how to do that, right? It's like pretty easy. Just want to make sure that you can kind of, it's the same thought process. You just iterate through and you turn things, you either count or you turn things differently. I would suggest, I don't know if we're going to ask you to memorize what like capital A or capital Z or lowercase a or lowercase z are in ASCII, but I would suggest perhaps writing that down in case we do. Just so you guys have a reference, like uppercase A is what, 97, and then lowercase is like 50 something, 65. Yeah, there you go. So just pretty much know the difference between them is 32. That's pretty important. Yeah. Am I good on this? OK.
You could theoretically write some of these down, right, as well on our
little. You theoretically could just copy the function down. That's true. You guys have.
Wait, not that.
you guys have a sheet. You guys have a note sheet. You can type it, you can write it, you can do whatever you want with it. Yeah. So theoretically, if you wanted to, go for it.
So you know when we're doing like two upper, two lower, we don't really necessarily need to remember the value. We can just use the two upper, two lower function.
Yeah, but if we gave you a question that says write to upper, then you would need to write it. Yeah. So you guys can assume that you guys have access to all functions, but if you want to use two upper or two lower, what do you also have to do? Is it cs50.h? Be careful there. So two upper, two lower, is upper, is lower, functions that involve string manipulation are all within either the ASCII, are within the math library or within the string library. So if you guys use those functions, be careful to remember to include that header. So perhaps also something you want to include in your sheet, what are the header, what are the libraries we've been using? What functions are inside those libraries? It's important. Yeah?
Can we kind of just pop out and do hashtag include absolutely every library we've ever seen, in all of the questions?
You could. I don't know how happy we're going to be to grade that quiz when every piece of code is twice as long as it needs to be. I don't know. We might take off a point for style, but theoretically your code would be right. You guys could cop out and just include everything. That's fine too. Yeah. Yeah. I would suggest not doing that though. Yeah. Good question. Worst case scenario. If you totally forget, you could do that. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Code is right there. I used n instead of count, but whatever floats your boat.
Wait. So we wouldn't have to hashtag include because we're starting at the int.
Yeah, I just assumed that we were asked to write the function, and so you can just, if you wanted to be safe, you could probably put it there, but I just didn't bother. Yeah. I don't even know if you need any library for this, because you're not really printing out anything or anything, right? You may need I don't know if you need a library. Yeah. Okay. All right, this is also a bit more along the lines of memory manipulation. This is kind of a bit tricky. Think about this. You have a function called func. I could have named it whatever, but I chose to name it func. I have it above my main. Remember, if you want to have a function after your main, you want to make sure you include the prototype at the top. But since in this case, it was so short that I felt that I could just include it atop the main, I didn't need to have the prototype because it's already written above. So all I'm doing in my main function is creating integer x equals 10. I'm calling my func function and then printing out something. And then that's actually what func is doing. You guys want to think through this because it's a bit tricky. It's very, very tricky, actually. Think through what this program would be outputting. Give you guys 2 minutes. Good discussions? Yeah. All right, so this is tricky for a reason, and this is why I wanted to bring this to everyone's attention. Does anyone want to give me a hint? Or sorry, it's not a hint. Does anyone want to give me a suggestion, an attempt? What would this print out? Totally fine if you're wrong. Yeah.
I think it's 100 and then 10 on two separate lines.
And then 10? Does anyone have any other guesses? Yeah.
Maybe just 10 because func is not returning anything.
Okay, so we have guess number one is that guess number two is just going to print out 10. Does anyone have any other guesses? Okay. So let's walk through this, right? Whenever you get a piece of code, don't just look at it and be that's so much stuff, I'm so confused. Calm yourself down. Just know that you can just look through code line by line. That's all it is. It's like reading a book. So with any function, we always start at main. So we're going to start at im main void, even though the program's already run down, right? Start at im main void, int x equals 10. So I'm going to erase this. So I'm going to actually have I'm gonna draw the memory, just so you guys can kind of see what's happening. Remember, down here we have our stack. Up here we have our heap, somewhere up here. Stack grows up, right? And within the stack you have the mains function as well as all of mains local variables. So here, int x equals 10. Within our main function, we're creating a variable called x. We're setting that equal to 10. Here, you've got some x, and you're setting that equal to 10, right, within main. Everyone good? Function. So now, within our main function, we're calling the function we've written above. So we're going to enter the second function. We're going to create another variable, int x equals 100. What's happening here at the stack? What happens when you call a function that creates new variables? What happens here at the stack? Yeah, so it actually creates a copy, and it kind of piles on top. Think of a stack of books, a stack of anything. Piles on top. First in, last out. Last in, first out. So it's going to create an X here. That's going to have all funcs variables. Great, so now we have two different X's that represent two very different things. Then we're going to print out the integer of x. So let's print out 100, right? Because here, it's 100. So that's the first thing that is going to print out. As this function returns nothing, now that function, that line in main, is done. Everyone good with me so far? So we're now through two out of the three lines of our main function. Now we're going to hit the third line. We're going to print f. What is this x within main? What does that represent? What value is x now? It's 100?
It's still 10.
It's still 10. Yeah. Because remember, within our func, x equals 10, or 100. But if we return back to our main function, that variable is stored in a different place on our stack. So now we have to go back to the main stack with main's local variables. And here, x is equal to 10. And so we're going to print out 10. So she was absolutely right. We're going to have the output of 110. Yeah.
When you malloc, is it the heap or the stack that is?
When you malloc, you're taking memory from the heap and allocating it so that you don't have to mess with any of this. So I guess the bigger takeaway here is something called scope. For those of you who were at the review session last night, we talked briefly about this. Scope defines how and when your variables exist, or within what frames do your variables exist. Pretty much the rule of thumb generally is your variables, if you create them inside curly braces, they exist only inside those curly braces. So for example, in our function of func, you see those two braces. If you're creating anything inside of it, chances are all you're doing is creating a stack and storing that there. Same thing in main, that's just stored inside of main. Also, you want to be very, very careful here, because scope also lends itself to different examples. So for example, like a for loop. For int I equals 0. I is less than, I don't know, 10. I plus plus. And you've got code inside of it, right? Where does this variable I actually only exist? Only inside of your for loop. So I bet many of you guys have probably encountered this error when you're doing like programs and your PSETs. How many of you guys have tried to use I outside of a for loop and had an error, like an unreferenced like integer or something like that? The reason why that happens is because here you're creating something that only exists within your for loop. And if you try to use it, I doesn't actually exist outside of it. So basically your computer is saying, I don't know what you're talking about. Like all I know is that an I was here, but now no longer. So if I were to create a for loop inside, right, and I'm going to create another, like int j, and have it do whatever, and you have a code inside of that loop, j only exists here, but that also exists within I. And so j only exists within this for loop, whereas I exists in the whole thing. Everyone clear? Same thing with conditional statements if you want to create anything. Same thing with while loops if you want to create anything. That's something to be very, very careful about. So this was a really good problem in the sense that it demonstrated two things. It demonstrated first scope, and then it demonstrated also memory allocation. Because you guys should know that like functions grow upwards in the stack, and that when you call functions, you're creating essentially a new stack of memory that is very different from what your main's memory is. Yeah. Phew, everyone okay on that? That was confusing. Very good topics to go over because you're probably gonna get some tricky things like that on the quiz. Yeah. Cool. Output, you get 100 on one line and then 10 on the other. Yeah, very good. Okay. Now you guys will get the chance to be the TAs. You get to answer all the lovely emails that I sometimes get. So, dear Andy, I see, I think something's going wrong with my compiler. I'm certain that my code is correct, but I keep getting a segmentation fault every time I run. What's going on? Please help. Love. Lots of love. If you guys got something like that, how would you respond? These are actually like very common questions we'll ask you, is if we'll give you kind of a scenario, you'll give us your best guess at what's going on. Anyone have a stab at what's going on? Yeah.
Maybe dereference like a null, something like the pointer is pointing at something null.
Yeah, that would be an example of when that would happen, but what's like the larger picture of what's going on here? Yeah.
Is it you're trying to access memory that you're not supposed to have
exactly.
access to?
So think of a seg fault as just off limits, restricted area in memory that you should not be touching. So pretty much when you're trying to index, like for example, you've declared an array from 0 to 9, but you try to touch that 10th value, you don't have access to that because you haven't declared it. And so your computer is gonna look at that and be like, uh-oh, you're trying to go outside the bounds of an index. I'm gonna give you a segmentation fault. Think of it as segment, right? An extra segment. A fault is when you try to breach something that you shouldn't be there. Segmentation fault is anytime you try to touch things that you shouldn't be touching. So common examples are an index. Of course, if you were trying to touch something that was null, that would also work as well. If your pointer was trying to touch things that shouldn't touch, that could also work as well. Most typically, you'll see this in an array. Everyone good?
So if you're like, you want to access like the 10th point and there's only like a limit of 9 or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly, pretty much. Cool. Dear Andy, so we've got these wonderful things called sorts. If merge sort, as we saw in the example when David did the whole thing in class, like why, if it's so much faster than any of the other sorts, why do we even bother knowing any of the other sorts? What is this question really asking you? Like, what's like the three word?
What's the trade-off?
Exactly, that's what the question's asking. Why, what's the trade-off between merge sort versus any other sorts?
It takes memory, right?
Yeah, do you want to explain that a bit more?
So like merge
first,
sort.
Let's explain merge sort. How does merge sort work?
So like it works by like dividing everything into half kind of and then putting it together and like reallocating it in order.
Yeah.
Like every time you've like every time you merge the sets.
Pretty much. So I can draw this out, but it would take me like 5 minutes to draw it out. Look back onto the section slides where we covered merge sort. Exactly. So the way merge sort works is that it divides things in half and then it just looks at the first values of all of them and sorts only that, continuously creates new arrays and puts things more and more in order. And so while that's really, really fast because it's, you know, binary search, it's n log of n, you're creating so many different arrays that you're using a huge amount of memory. And so while it is faster, the trade-off here is that you're using more memory. And so, hint, sorts and searches were covered a lot more this year than they have been in like years previous. You guys should see that reflected accordingly on the quiz. I would definitely spend time going over what all of the different sorts are, how binary search, how linear search work, how to perhaps pseudocode those out, what are the running times. Like something like running times is very easy to copy down onto a neural sheet, right? It's really hard when you're in the middle of a test or how to figure that out. Copy it down. I guarantee you, you're going to need to know that. What are the trade-offs? Worst case, best case scenarios for all of them. Very good to know. Yeah.
We need to know how to code merge sort. Like we need to remember the like recursive.
I highly doubt it just because it's like fairly complicated, but it may not be infeasible if we ask you to pseudocode it out. Yeah. Yep. Okay, one more. This may have come up in like your last piece in a bit. Yeah. Did everyone hear that? So pretty much, first of all, what type of program would be giving you an output like this? Remember we asked you to learn about this new type of debugging tool? What was the name of it? Valgrind, right? It was just a memory, it was a program where you could call that could kind of keep track of all the memory you were using in your program and what was going on. So if you got something like definitely lost 40 bytes in one block, probably you're not remembering to free it. Because if you're losing bytes of memory, that means you've accessed that memory, but you haven't been able to free it. So you want to make sure that you're also using free, that's a function, to like free or all of the memory allocated by malloc. Cool. So this slide, I'll have it up. It's everywhere in a lot of lectures and a lot of section slides. You really want to make sure you just know all of this. Either in your note sheet or if you want to memorize it, feel free to. That's really, really, really important. Also a very good question that we may ask, like, why is selection sort? Look at selection sort. All the runtimes are n squared, regardless of how the list comes to you as. So why is selection sort? I'll give you guys 30 seconds to think about this because it's kind of confusing. It involves some conceptual thought. Why would the runtimes be the same in both the worst and best case scenarios? Yeah.
Because like selection sort checks each like position or space in like this little array thing.
Yeah.
Whatever, so like even in the best case scenario, even if it's like perfectly sorted, it would still have to be like, okay, one, like in my first place I have one, and like go through all of them, okay, one is the smallest, and then it goes again and it's like two, okay, two is the smallest of all the things, but it still has to check each and every one.
Yeah, so for example, let's just say we have a list already sorted, an array, 1 to 5. The way that selection sorts is that it goes through, it checks these two, then it checks those two, and then it checks, and it checks. It keeps checking all of them, regardless of whether or not it's actually sorted, because that's simply the way the sort works. And so this question is kind of like a conceptual question we'll ask, where first you have to know what selection sort is, right? To be able to answer the question, you have to be able to understand conceptually what's going on, and then you can apply it and think, okay, let's just imagine worst case scenario, they're all in descending order. How would that affect it? What if it's ascending order, if it's already sorted? How would that affect the runtimes? And in selection sort, you'll notice that it doesn't actually matter because you're checking all the values regardless of what's happening. And so, good things to remember, why some sorts differ from others and how best and worst case scenarios would affect all of them. I'm gonna really hit in like sorts because that will be on the quiz, yeah. Okay, there's like 6 minutes left. I can take like 3 minutes of questions. I can also hang around for like 20 minutes after section if you want to ask questions as well. Does anyone just have like really brief questions or conceptual issues they're unclear about right now? Yeah.
Do you know the bitwise operators?
Yeah, so bitwise operators are something that you probably might just want to put on your sheet. So like quickly, I don't want to go too much in depth because Harvard in their review session covered it pretty well. Bitwise operator, there's 5 of them, right? There's this, which is the XOR function. There's ampersand, which is the AND, pipe, which is the OR. You have, and then you have like the 2 different types of shifts. If I give you 2 values, if I give you like 1 and 1, what would that evaluate to? If I give you true and true? True. What about true or false? Still true, right? Because there's an OR. They will most likely give you numbers. So remember, 1 equals true, 0 equals false. And we might give you these things and ask you to like tell us what happens. Harvard covers it within the first 10 minutes of their study session really, really well. So you guys want to make sure you look back on that. Yeah.
Is PSET 5?
No. Don't even look at PSET 5 right now. It's hard. Just don't even bother looking at PSET 5. However, I have some hints and suggestions. I would suggest you start PSET 5 as soon as the quiz is over. This will be the hardest week, but then you guys will be past it on the hills of rolling green and puppies, and it's fine. Like significantly, this class gets significantly easier after the 5th PSET.
Office hours is Sunday, Monday?
Yeah, so office hours will be Sunday and Monday for the PSET. Office hours tonight essentially will just be review for the quiz. If anyone wants to come in and ask TA's question, we'll be there. I'll take maybe like one more question if anyone has a question. Yeah.
When you're defining nodes, what I don't understand is if you say node start and then next, does that does the computer automatically understand that you're referring to another pointer? Do you have to specify, like relink it by writing something?
So basically, the struct of a node is, remember, it's like you create the node and then you have a pointer called next. All you're doing is having the structure there. You have to assign that pointer somewhere. So the computer doesn't know what it's doing yet. You have to actually assign it when you're creating your linked list. And that's what mainly PCFI will be on. Okay. So no worries about any of that right now.
So we don't need to focus too much on linked lists, just the general conception.
Pretty much stacks, queues, linked lists, trees, hash tables, just like be able to know what they are.
Okay.
We're not going to ask you like anything specific because we haven't really done a piece that covers any of that yet. So in the last 2 minutes before I set you free to kill this quiz, pretty much like think about how far you guys have come in this class. I remember when week two of this class, some of you spent 3 hours writing water. How long would it take you guys to write water now? 30 seconds maybe? Think about how much you guys have learned. It's like CS is a really, really hard subject. There's no doubt of that. It's hard. That's why no one studies it. That's why it's just hard. And it's totally fine. I'm really proud that everyone has made it this far. PSETs are not easy. They take a lot of time. You guys, I will never ask you to write the game of 15 or Visionaire on the PSET. No need to just freak out about that. All we're testing here is to evaluate your conceptual knowledge as well as like some of your basic skills at coding. The test is designed to be really challenging. Like, it is designed for you to not get 100. It's also designed for you to probably not be able to finish in 75 minutes, and that's totally fine. You know those quizzes, like I'm a student myself, I know I hate it to when I walk out of a quiz being like, shit, that was really hard. Probably what's gonna happen, and that's totally fine, I'm telling you guys right now. The means on these things are not high at all. And for those of you who've been getting like threes on your problem sets, that does not mean you're gonna get a 60% in this class. If you get a 60% on the quiz, that does not mean you're gonna get a D in this class. Like we see, especially for those of you in my section, I see how hard you guys are all working and I like keep track of that. You guys will be fine. There's no institutional memory of like happiness at the end of the semester because all the Harvard kids are telling their friends, oh, you'll be fine. No one's telling you guys that here. So I have to tell you guys that here. Like, you guys will be fine. I'm so proud of all of you guys. The test will be hard. Study for it and afterwards just throw it away. Get ready to learn new things. And eat candy. We have lots of candy. Get a good night's sleep. Like, don't not sleep, because that'd be really bad. Like, CS is a lot of logic. If you don't sleep, you can't function, your brain can't function. And I'll be here for the next 20 minutes if anyone wants to hang around. You guys are gonna kill it. Good luck.